Hello and welcome to the End Zone Podcast, and a happy holiday season to everyone out there. My name is Eric Jensen, joined today by Trey Watkins, per usual, and the great Joe Rolls. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me. We are here, week 16 of a regular season of, I'll just say it, the longest season of football ever. It just feels like there's no end in sight. And here we are in late December, yet we are still almost 3 full weeks away from this thing wrapping up. So, what a week it's been. We had Monday night football. We had Tuesday night football. You know, they say the NFL's big motto is like, football is family. Well, yeah, I guess so. Maybe football is family. Like, football has replaced the family structure. Like, football is what there is now instead of your family. So that's what I took away from that. Anyhow, is this season feeling as long for you as it is for me, Joe?
It wasn't. Just because the Broncos were in the mix. This has been the Broncos' best season since 2016 to this point. So I have enjoyed this ride. I am a little concerned that the next 3 weeks might feel pretty long, just because the Broncos are now all but mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Teddy Bridgewater is out, so now they're starting Drew Lock, and they're about to play 3 straight division foes. The Raiders look, you know, susceptible, but then the Chargers and the Chiefs both look like they're going to contend for the Super Bowl. So games could get ugly pretty quick. But so far it's been fun. I can't complain, and I've enjoyed watching football every week. I'm not about to complain about football because I know how bad it's going to be once it's gone.
Interesting. Well, that's good. I've taken a little bit of a backseat this year with football. I've watched for Broncos and kind of that's about it. And maybe that's part of my issue, is that I've just watched for Broncos every week. And
I mean, they don't even have any Pro Bowlers. How little fun is that?
Yeah. I mean, you can take that however you want, but I mean, let's just get into it. They play the Raiders this week. Obviously terrible news with the Teddy injury. Now watch Drew Lock. I really like the tweet that you sent a little while back, Joe, and I've been thinking about it a lot, and I really agree with it. The issue with the Broncos offense is that with Teddy, it doesn't look as flashy or spectacular, but it is by the numbers, although not by the eye test, but by the numbers, efficient. But when Drew Lock gets in there, it seems like the ball moves quicker. There's more verticality to it. But then every like sixth play, there's a terrible mistake that you're like, oh, this is prime Jameis Winston. So I don't really know what to think. I'm pretty depressed by every option the Broncos have a quarterback. It just feels like the same thing that it always is. I think we know this. And it feels like big thing, you know, there are other reasons for concern too, because you used to be able to point to them and say, oh, look at all these, you know, great weapons that they have. Even with Teddy making all his reads, which Drew Lock never did, Jerry Jeudy's numbers haven't really gone up a ton. You know, Cortland Sutton has basically totally disappeared from the game plan. And Tim Patrick is the most consistent wide receiver they have. And even some weeks he doesn't put up more than 30 yards. So I cannot figure out what I think about this Broncos offense. Basically, the only part of it that I know is that Javonte Williams is very good and that he should be getting the majority of the totes and that they should move away from Melvin Gordon. I don't care if the numbers say, but Melvin Gordon is good. You should just give the workload to Javonte Williams because he's younger and faster and better. And Melvin Gordon almost fumbled on Sunday and he has fumble issues. So that's kind of my ramblings into getting into this Broncos offense here. But what do you think about, what has been your general thought on this Broncos offense this year? Do you think it's just, you know, a matter of the quarterback, or how much of it has to do with Pat Shurmur? Like what is the issue and why is there such a disparity from what, you know, the numbers say to what the watching the game says?
There's a few questions there, so I'm going to try and
pick it apart. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. There's a lot to kind of digest with this. The biggest issues, in my opinion, are, yes, the quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater has shown a clear decline over the last five or so games. Part of that, I do believe the injury to his shin may be more significant than we thought. I'm not a doctor, not in the room, but he's not driving the ball outside the numbers very well at this point, to the point where, and again, to be completely clear, I said that Drew Lock should start way back after they lost the Browns game, because at that point it looked pretty obvious that they weren't going to make the playoffs. And with that in mind, Drew Lock does have one more year on his rookie contract. You might as well kind of trot him out there and see if he can breathe and chew gum at the same time. But that said, yeah, Teddy Bridgewater, with him in the offense, the big issue with the passing game is that he was having issues driving the ball to the receivers. He's also starting to make a lot more mental mistakes that definitely showed up in the Bengals game. And part of it also is, I think Pat Shurmur did a pretty poor job of kind of leaning into the things that Bridgewater did well. This isn't news to anybody who watched Pat Shurmur not really adapt to Drew Lock until the final six games of last year. This is kind of what Pat Shurmur does. In a vacuum, the plays he calls make sense. The sequencing is kind of shaky. It doesn't really do a good job of making it easier for the receivers. Doesn't really accommodate what the quarterback does until he has to. So those are the two biggest issues. The offensive line, the pass protection is okay. I would say the Broncos offensive line is probably hovering around league average, maybe a little bit below. They have issues at center. Lloyd Cushenberry's anchor is pretty shaky. Definitely on the Drew Lock touchdown pass, if you guys watched that to Tim Patrick last week, DJ Reader had Lloyd Cushenberry basically sitting on top of Drew Lock by the time Lock let go of the ball, which is part of the reason why the ball was short. The right tackle, Bobby Massey, is probably the Broncos' best right tackle since Billy Turner in 2018. But he doesn't always win He has issues with his height, causes issues with his leverage. So against defensive ends that can get into his body, he's going to have issues just because he doesn't have the same kind of play strength. Dalton Risner's having a down season. His issues at this point are pretty well pronounced. He has problems against speed and quickness, and teams know that, and teams will try and attack that with stunts or moving edge rushers inside. Quinn Meinerz is a much better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. He's doing a pretty good job against stunts, but his hands can get beat here and there. Again, he's a rookie, so it's not a huge thing. Garrett Bowles is not playing at an all-pro level. Obviously, he's probably the Broncos' best offensive lineman still, but not a Pro Bowler. I know he's an alternate, but that's kind of a stretch just because they do with AFC and NFC. I would say there's probably 10 tackles in the NFC that are better than Garrett Bowles. And again, I say that I like Garrett Bowles at this point. Like the way he's put it together in the last couple of years is commendable. I don't have a problem with the contract, anything like that, but he has issues with his hands, and better edge rushers are going to be able to attack that. We saw that with Trey Hendrickson. So that's kind of like, you know, the long and short version of like the actual issues. Cortland Sutton's drops don't help. Noah Fant has had some issues with blocking. It's gotten better in recent weeks. The reason the numbers are kind of weird for the Broncos offense, there's a lot to that. I made a thread about this on Twitter. If you guys want to actually read into all that, I went over it quite a bit. But the big problems are the Broncos can move the ball between the 20s. They do a decent job moving the sticks when the situation, like when they're not in third and impossible, they do an okay job moving the sticks, but they do such a bad job starting off their drives. Their first down numbers are really, really shaky. So what ends up happening a lot of times is if Pat Shurmur calls a shit play on first down, then it's second and 10, and then he runs the ball and they get stuffed, then it's third and 11. Most offenses are going to have trouble converting that. And then DVOA numbers, this is Football Outsiders stat. They break down third down. They lump it up with fourth down. The Broncos are actually quite good on fourth down when they go for it. They don't go for it all the time. But, and that's why DVOA does that. They lump those two numbers together because fourth down sample is so small that it's not really accurate if you don't combine the two. So that makes it look better than it is in terms of like DVOA. The other thing that really helps their DVOA numbers, EPA as well. The first 3 weeks of the season, the Broncos beat up on a bunch of crappy teams. Since then, they've been significantly worse on offense. And again, as Teddy Bridgewater declined, the passing offense is completely gone in the tank. The run game has gotten better. Javonte Williams has really improved in the last 4 or 5 weeks. They're still allowing stuffs on and I'm not looking at the number right now, but I want to say they still allow stuffs on 17% of all carries, which is a problem. That's below average. And then Melvin Gordon, he's good. I would say Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams together, the most accurate part, or not most accurate. They're the most consistently good part of the Broncos offense, but running the ball is less efficient than passing the ball. And when you're relying on your running game to move the ball on offense, you're kind of dependent on the game situation. If the Broncos get down by two scores, it's really hard to stick with the run because you're then fighting the clock as well. And they struggle to score. That's the last part. Bridgewater, we kind of knew coming into the season that Bridgewater doesn't have the arm strength to like squeeze the ball in the tight windows. So for them to be good in the red zone, it was gonna depend on Shurmur doing a good job setting him up, and he hasn't done it.
Yeah, I think those are all really well-made points, especially about how they struggle so much in the red zone. And it's not just Teddy's arm. It's just a case, I think, of terrible red zone play calling. Like
yeah,
when they're,
yeah, it's both. It's definitely both.
When they're on the 3-yard line, like they have this tendency to pass three times. It doesn't really make a ton of sense to me. When I watch it, especially when you have Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams, like if you get to the 3-yard line, you should probably just be trying to run it, or at least using play action to give yourself a better shot at having those pass plays. But really the thing I'm most annoyed by this season is Pat Shurmur. I'm just annoyed by, because we've seen this offense for like 4 years now, and it clearly, no matter who's running it, it clearly does not play to the strengths of quarterbacks and passing games. And I think that I'm concerned with some of your tweets today, but you seem to think Vic Fangio could be sticking around. But if he does, I think there has to be an ultimatum made on him that they change offensive coordinators, because they need, quite frankly, they just need to modernize the offense, because it's not good enough.
The funny thing about the issues with Pat Shurmur is all of the issues that are cropping up are all things that were really obvious if you watched his Giants tape. And back then I said, I'm not trying to, you know, like the whole, like pat me on the back, but when the Broncos fired Rich Scangarello, I mentioned the issues that I saw with Pat Shurmur's offense, and everybody just said, I'm a Rich Scangarello fanboy, and he has his issues. Like I obviously there's a reason he's not an offensive coordinator anymore. But part of the problem with Drew Lock is that the Broncos Elway drafted Drew Lock with the idea that he would be fitting into a Shanahan style offense. And then after 1 year, the Broncos moved away from a Shanahan style offense to an offense that is fairly similar to the Mike McCarthy offense with the Packers, obviously without Aaron Rodgers, but a lot of isolation routes that depend on a quarterback making the correct read and then receivers running good routes. And it's a issue in terms of fit, just because both Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton, neither one of them are excellent at separating. They're better at winning 50-50 balls. And so it makes them over-reliant on Jerry Jeudy because Shurmur doesn't do enough to get his receivers open. And the quarterbacks struggle to make the reads.
Yeah. You know, I think those are both excellent points. And Trey, I'm going to come to you here. I was wondering, what have you thought about – let's shift some focus here to the defense. What have you thought, you know, about the Broncos' defense this year? I know we've talked about it a little bit. I just want to see what you think before we get into this with me and Joe. I just want to see what you have thought about this Broncos' defense this year.
See, I haven't totally watched a ton of Broncos football this year, but when I have, I mean, I think I've seen a Broncos defense that isn't overly, I guess you could say, dominant statistically, maybe, but there's still a respectable unit. Even without Von Miller, you know, they have some nice corner talent, at least from the, you know, the outside point of view. Love what Patrick Surtain has done this year. He's been really, really good. Justin Simmons has always been good. I think it's just that it's been a respectable unit, I think, you know, from the limited time that I've watched them. It's just that they haven't been, you know, consistently dominant like they have been in previous years, which isn't, well, I mean, I guess you could say it's somewhat expected because defensive or regression on the defensive side of the ball tends to come more quickly than on the offensive side of the ball, simply because it's that good defensive play requires so many different kinds of variables to go in their favor for a unit to be so consistently dominant. And I think that goes for maybe almost every single great defense. So they haven't really been put in too many advantageous spots this year, but when they've been able to play their game and have the ball out in front of them, then I think they've been a respectable unit, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I would say that the defense has been, I feel kind of weird saying this, but I don't know if you agree with this, Joe. I feel like this has been maybe the best Vic Fangio defense that's been in Denver. I really like what they like in terms of just every, I know the expectations were sky high and they didn't live up to that, but just as a whole, you look and there's, I don't see a real weakness. They've found ways to generate pass rush. You know, Jonathan Cooper has been a guy who's really come on and provided an edge presence while Bradley Chubb has dealt with an injury. They have some good players inside. Draymond Jones has been a little up and down, but mainly good this year on the inside. Their linebackers have looked pretty decent throughout the year. There's been a little bit of fluctuation, but not much. And the secondary has been kind of as advertised. My question for you is this. If the Broncos did decide to move off of Vic Fangio, do you think that defensive success could be sustained and built on into next year?
Well, there's a couple parts to this too. The big one is, first of all, I don't necessarily disagree with you that this is one of the better defenses that Fangio's had. I think the issue is the Broncos defense is kind of incomplete this year, but they've been incomplete each of the last 2 years as well due to injury or just in general. In 2019, I would say statistically that was the better defense, but that defense didn't have the secondary that this defense has. They had Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson, but they didn't have corners because Chris Harris was on the decline. But their pass rush was significantly better, so they didn't have to rely on blitzing and stunts to get home. Whereas this year, even before the Von Miller trade, the Broncos were having issues generating a pass rush, so they were very reliant on Vic Fangio dialing up the right pressures. But their secondary is significantly better, which helps them to kind of keep games closer. In terms of can it be maintained, it really depends on who they'd hire and then also what Peyton does in the offseason, because the Broncos essentially have one consistent pass rusher right now, and he's injured. Draymond Jones is the only pass rusher statistically who's been able to continuously create some degree of push without help. Bradley Chubb looks like a shell of himself since he came back from his injury. Malik Reed's having the worst season of his NFL career. Jonathan Cooper is probably the Broncos' best edge rusher, but he has issues with length because he has short arms. And that's going to be an issue against longer tackles if he can't beat them with his burst. So the Broncos, they have a first-round needed edge rusher for sure. And I would say that they could also it wouldn't be a bad idea to also invest a top 100 pick into a defensive lineman or two, just because Shelby Harris is 30. If you move on from him after this season, it only costs $3 million. I don't know if they'll do that. I think they'll hold on to him for another year because he is playing through injury, but he's having probably the worst season of his career with the Broncos this year too. And again, I'm not trying to dog on him, but he's not creating the same kind of push that he was. Mike Purcell, similar boat, playing pretty well, but not what he was. And then they obviously have a big need at linebacker. Baron Browning looks really promising. Jonas Griffith had one good game, probably a special teamer. As teams get more tape of him, that might be an issue. Kenny Young has been okay, but they definitely miss Alexander Johnson, Josie Jewell. If they bring one of those guys back, fix the pass rush, and hire a guy who isn't a fool, their defense should be good next year regardless. The tea leaves definitely look like they're blowing towards Fangio staying for a fourth year with the idea, and I am assuming this part, the fact that the Broncos are going to be sold in March, I don't think Peyton wants to kind of have the new owner come in and Peyton already has the coach that's going to probably define his tenure. He's going to sit on Fangio for a year, hope the new owner comes in, and then if Fangio doesn't improve, he can fire him, and then he still has a chance to hang on. So it's kind of like the politics game. And again, I get it. Fangio's a really good defensive play caller. Like, definitely is. The issues with that idea, if that's what the Broncos do, is you would have a lame duck head coach, and odds are you're going to probably have to fire, not have to, but they're probably going to replace the offensive coordinator, probably going to replace the special teams coordinator. So then Peyton would be hiring new assistant coaches that may be fired in a year. So the odds of him getting a top candidate is pretty low. So keeping Fangio for a year, but not extending him, is going to probably cause issues, but that's where the Broncos are at because their ownership situation is so shitty.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, your thoughts on that. So thank you for getting to that there, but it's certainly, as a fan, I'm not thrilled by the news. I am happy that apparently that there is growing smoke that the team will get an actual owner by March.
Might be Peyton Manning.
That'll be nice. If only they could get that done sooner, like say February, like when coaching hiring cycles happen, like maybe you could just get it done by February, but no. I'm just having a hard time staying motivated about like tuning in next year because unless they do like miraculously get Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, like I don't know what is the point of watching next year if it's just gonna be the same team, the same coach. Maybe a slightly different off. Who knows?
I mean, you could get really excited about Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna trust everybody yelling at me and saying, "Stop! None of these quarterbacks are good." I'm gonna trust all those people. That's what I've decided this offseason. I've decided I'm going to not form any opinion for myself and just trust all the smart people like the Mina Kimes of the world, the Nate Tices of the world, everybody in the world who is yelling, "Don't draft a quarterback this year. They're all terrible." I'm going to trust those people and I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride. And if the Broncos draft a quarterback, I'm going to be very disappointed, but then I'll talk myself into it by September and we'll go off again. And by November, I'll be sat on the podcast again. And it's a vicious cycle.
We'll need to get a clip of that. So in September, when I'm on, we can go back over this.
Yes, indeed. All right. Let's talk about the Raiders just really quick.
Yeah.
So I've been pretty invested in that season this year. To me, I want to ask you this, Trey. Where do you think the Raiders are as a franchise? Because I really don't know, because there were signs of true progress in September, like there always are for them. But then they lost their tight end. One of their emerging weapons made a terrible life decision and is now likely in prison for a majority of his life. And their coach gets fired mid-year for making racist derogatory comments. And yet still the product on the field is not bad. Like I really want to stress this. The Raiders aren't bad. Like the defense has improved like a lot. Like I think this defense is way better than what it was last year. This is not last year down the stretch where they're getting blown out every week. If they lose, they lose these close fluky games where the offense struggles and Derek Carr kind of falls apart down the stretch. But while you say that, Derek Carr has also, I think, had the best season of his career. They're just a very confusing team to me.
Yeah, and the thing with the Raiders is that I think right now the Raiders are simply just fighting and just trying to hold on for the rest of the season and then just trying to see what can happen in the offseason. Because, I mean, I think I can attest for both of you by saying that the Raiders likely aren't going to make the playoffs. They just have too many holes. They're just not a good football. It's hard for me to judge if they're a good football team. I know that, like Eric said, the Raiders aren't bad, but they're not great either. And I don't even know if they're good. They're just maybe a little bit of an average football team that runs into a lot of advantageous circumstances on both sides of the ball at times. And you know, maybe that works for teams fighting for wild card spots like the Raiders are doing, but everything else from, you know, the makeup of the Raiders, it just doesn't inspire a crap ton of confidence either way. So just with the Raiders is that they just have a lot of guys sprinkled throughout their roster that maybe haven't found success elsewhere, but have somehow found success in Las Vegas. I mean, one of them is Denzel Perryman. Denzel Perryman was a little bit of an afterthought with the Chargers. Then he just comes over to the Raiders and he's leading the team in tackles, putting together the best year of his career. It's just the Raiders are full of guys like that. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Some of that's a good thing, but everywhere else is just lots of, you know, who knows and question marks and all that type of stuff. So it's just hard to really dissect what the Raiders are at this point. And even their direction going forward, because they still have to hire a new coach. Mike Mayock, the GM, is probably going to go through a rather stressful and pretty, maybe somewhat frustrating draft process, because he might have some holes to fill. He does, but he might have a lot more holes to fill than expected. Certainly a wide receiver, like Eric alluded to with Henry Ruggs now in prison after making a terrible life decision. And then, you know, you have Derek Carr there, but, you know, is he really the guy that you want moving forward? Really? I mean, I know he's had a good statistical season, but there are times when Derek Carr.
I was thinking about this. There are no better options than Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Derek Carr is like,
sucks.
Derek Carr is by far the best option available. And he hasn't been bad this year, though.
He hasn't been bad. Of course not. I'm just saying that it's you know, there are times when Derek Carr looks great and there are times when Derek Carr looks absolutely awful. So I'm like, is he, you know, really the guy that you want spearheading sort of your mission towards becoming more of a contender, not just scrapping for a wild card spot each and every year?
I think that he looked great when he had all his weapons.
That's true. That's fair.
I just think you try, you keep going, and you give him all the weapons you can, and you see what happens. Because I think him with attacking options is a good thing. One thing you mentioned, Mike Mayock. Does Mike Mayock survive this year?
No.
I have no idea. So. He doesn't. That was one of the more confusing things thinking about it, because he was tied to John Gruden and everything, but now that John Gruden's gone, and now both their draft classes, you know, panned out terribly. So, I mean, what does he do? Does he get another shot? I mean,
the argument for keeping him would be that, well, he didn't actually do final say, so give him a shot to, you know, give final say.
Mm-hmm.
But as you alluded to, has he shown, and again, only Mark Davis really knows, but has he shown enough to believe that he will do better when he's actually getting final say? And at least the picks that we, you know, we know the picks don't look like it. The free agency signings don't suggest as much. There's a chance, just because if you fire him, you're going to have to pay his contract. And Mark Davis, if he's anything, he's cheap. So I don't think he's going to want to fire him.
Yeah.
I don't think you can sell Mike Mayock to the fan base. And I think Vegas is fickle enough that if they're stuck with that situation with a lame duck GM, I just don't think people are going to show up as like the same way. And that's actually one of the things, if you're going to move Carr, they should go out and draft Carson Strong. People probably at least get excited. And that'd be a good way to kind of lead your tank into 2023, where there's actually good quarterbacks.
Yeah. Or you can go with the lame duck guy. If you want to move on, go with the lame duck guy.
See, I don't understand. That's unlikely. I don't understand this fascination from both of you for moving on with Derek Carr's been a top 10 quarterback this year.
I mean, this is just hypothetical. If the Raiders don't really think Derek Carr is the guy to lead them towards them trying to, you know, position themselves as the true contender moving forward. That's all this is.
I believe that the argument for moving on from Carr next year is if they're willing and ready to just completely blow everything up and just suck their way into a top pick, like the top pick. And if that's the case, Carr's contract is very movable. You could also argue that if you're trying to contend next year, and again, only Mark Davis really knows what he's going to try and do. Carr, as you said, Carr has been good enough that if you put enough help around him, he'll look like a top 10-ish quarterback. He's between like the top 9 or so, and then like average. And it really depends on the system and the supporting cast. He's not a guy, and we're seeing this now, he's not a guy who's going to elevate weak teammates. And the problem with that is you're paying him like a guy who will, but there's not a better option unless they're getting Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Yeah, and then, you know, even if you want to move on next year, I mean, if you want to, you know, crap your way to the top pick, I mean, there's Bryce Young still waiting there.
Yep.
You know, so that's the incentive. I mean, you know, you can sell Vegas being, you know, Vegas, your top pick, your new franchise guy, you know, it's a new rebuild, it's a new Raiders, you know, it's a new city, new Raiders now after a failed couple years, but that sounds drastic. That sounds like the most drastic option for the Raiders, you know, at this point, the way that their team is constructed and the way that Mark Davis likes to do things.
The other part of it is too, is Carr's in the last year of his deal. So if they're not sure, it might make more sense to just rip off the bandaid and trade him and get something, because otherwise you're only getting a third round compensatory pick 2 years down the road. If he goes on to sign somewhere next, like not this year, but the year after. So in 2024, you would get a third round compensatory pick. Whereas if you trade him in this offseason, you may be able to get a second or even maybe a first.
Yeah.
That'd be a guy the Broncos might call about. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, I'm not kidding, man. We just said if he has talent around him, things can be okay. First talent endeavor.
First of all, I don't think it would happen just because it's in the division and the Broncos and the Raiders. Like,
right. Yeah. That is true. No, I forgot about that.
No, you're good. But if we entertain it, I would be pretty far out on Peyton if he traded for Derek Carr with a first round pick. If they did it with, you know, like a day two later pick, I'd be okay with it, just because he is an upgrade on Teddy Bridgewater, and I don't think there's much debate with that. But he's also 30 years old. You're not, realistically, he's not going to get much better. And you'd have to pay him because he's in the last year of his contract. So if you're giving up significant draft capital, I'm not happy about it with where the Broncos are at.
Right.
But I could argue, I can understand it, especially if he somehow becomes a free agent. I don't mind signing him at all.
Right. Yeah. That'd be interesting, because maybe he does hit free agency at some point. Who knows? But anyhow.
Yes.
All right, Trey, thank you for sitting patiently. We have Titans questions. I told Joe to come with some. I have some. I guess my first question is, why is Ryan Tannehill bad all of a sudden? Like, why does he have a penchant for throwing just terrible interceptions?
I think with the deal with Ryan Tannehill this year is that he's regressed statistically and on the field. I mean, I tweeted this during the Titans-Steelers games on Sunday. There have been too many instances where Ryan Tannehill puts the football in harm's way. And that's not really the type of player that the Titans want him to be, you know. You know, ever since he became the starting quarterback, he's been a quarterback that's been efficient, he's been accurate, and he's avoided turnovers for the most part. Whether it's him fumbling the football or him throwing, you know, interceptions, he's avoided turnovers, he's stayed efficient, and he's been deadly accurate. So, but I think this year, the thing with Ryan Tannehill is that he's ran into a lot, and I mean a lot, of instances where he's had to play games without either Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, or literally all three at the same time, like he had to do against the Patriots a couple weeks ago. And that was somewhat of a disaster of a game. But he just hasn't had the benefit of the doubt when it comes to having his full arsenal of weapons on the field. And when he's had his full arsenal of weapons on the field, the offense has been fine for the most part. You know, aside from the first couple, let's say 3-4 weeks of the season when Todd Downing was still trying to get into his own as the play caller and trying to settle down with the personnel of his team. But, you know, after those first couple games, you know, Todd Downing and that offense started to get into a little bit of a groove. But Julio Jones started dealing with hamstring problems. A.J. Brown was dealing with some things, and then Derrick Henry broke his foot. So, it just hasn't been advantageous for him at all, you know, this year, which is unfortunate, because when he's playing good football, I think he's arguably a top 10 quarterback in his league, you know, not just based on statistics, but based on the eye test, you know. So, and, you know, aside from the fact that his offensive line hasn't been doing him any favors this year, David Questenberry, you know, he was the Titans' best offensive lineman through like the first 2-3 games of the season. After that, he literally fell off a cliff. That right tackle spot has been a disaster. Nate Davis has went from all pro, you know, caliber in 2020 to almost maybe a little bit of a liability this year. He's been better over the past month, but during the first maybe month or so of the season, he was really bad. Ben Jones has been probably the most consistent lineman. Roger Saffold has been good, but he's been dealing with a nerve injury in his shoulder. And he was talking about it, saying at some point during games, he could get hit wrong and he just can't feel his arm. And that's why he just goes down and he has to come out of the game. So, but when he's been playing, he's been all right. You know, he hasn't been anything crazy. I think that's been mostly due to the shoulder and everything. And Taylor won. After that first game, you know, he kind of settled down, got into a groove. So, I don't know. It's just the unit up front has been dealing with injuries, has been dealing with underperformers at key spots. And that all ties back to Ryan Tannehill not having a good year so far. So I think it's just a combination of a lot of things that you wouldn't want any quarterback to deal with. So, you know, especially for a veteran quarterback that's trying to navigate through a season in which his team is expected to be a contender. So,
Joe, I'll give you the floor here.
Uh, Do you think the Titans can win a playoff game? Because they're going to make it.
If they get their full array of weapons back, then I think they can win one.
Is there any match? Is there any matchups in particular that you like for them? And again, I ask. I haven't watched a lot of Titans just because I've been really focused on the games that the Broncos are going to play. I've been watching a lot of you know, their upcoming opponents. And obviously the Broncos didn't play the AFC South. But to me, I don't know necessarily based on like what I'm looking at, right? Like I'm looking at, you know, a bunch of different numbers and then just what I have seen of Tannehill. The big thing that struck out to me, and I kind of thought this, if you remember back when you and I talked before the season, the big thing that stuck out to me was the fact that he had painfully little help around him. And again, like it's not a surprise that Julio is hurt because Julio gets hurt at this point. Like I'm not, you know, that's not slander. He's very good when he's healthy. But you deal with the injuries. Like, you kind of expect it based on the fact that he's been banged up for a while. And Derrick Henry, it's not a I don't want to say it's expected that he got hurt because it's not. But running backs have the highest rate of attrition in the NFL. So it's not a huge surprise that he got hurt either. So it turns into a situation where the fact that Tannehill's numbers are down, a large part of that to me, at least based on what I'm looking at, is just he's doing the best he can with a weak supporting cast.
And you made a good point with that. And just to add on, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. You actually know the Titans. I'm just that's just where I'm at with it. So I'm just curious, like what matchups like really jump out to you as like potentially favorable.
Yeah, and just to add on to what I was trying to say is that aside from AJ Brown and Julio Jones, the wide receiver depth isn't really good. I mean, Josh Reynolds was supposed to be the wide receiver three, but he dealt with injuries. He wasn't really getting a ton of snaps. He got released and got picked up on waivers by the Lions. You know, aside from Josh Reynolds at that time, they lost Cameron Batson, who was an important depth receiver for them. So now they're running out Nick Westbrook Akine for, you know, X spots maybe. Chester Rogers is out there. They're running out sixth-round rookie Racy McMath, you know, who was supposed to only contribute on special teams, if that. So it's just been a disarray in terms of consistency for Tannehill having his weapons so he can have the best opportunities for success. Alluded to matchups that might be a little bit advantageous for the Titans. I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, maybe if you look at the Chargers as one, maybe, and I mean, maybe, simply because the Chargers can't stop the run at all. They're horrible at stopping the run. They can't really run the football consistently. And the Titans, you know, they're good against the run. They have a decent pass rush to where they can sit forward. They can drop a multitude of guys to the covers, and they can maybe make some things happen. So maybe if the, maybe the Chargers, based on, you know, their lack of ability to stop the run, you know, just looking through, though, it's really just hard to, you know, maybe, I don't know. It's, I would have to look over that just to give you a concrete answer. But maybe one is the Chargers, you know, being it's that they can't really stop the run.
I could see it just because the Chargers get in their own way on offense at times. As you mentioned, their defense, they struggle to stop the run. And then their special teams is almost as bad as the Broncos. So, like, if you guys get points off special teams, that might open the door for, you know, scenarios. Also, I think if the Steelers make the playoffs, I'm surprised that you guys lost to the Steelers to begin with. I thought that was just kind of a fluky loss. And I think in a rematch, you guys would get it.
Oh, 100%. Because the Steelers really cannot stop the run. Their offense got literally dominated by the Titans defense all day long. Even when the Steelers got those turnovers and, you know, they had the ball in advantageous positions on the plus side of the field in Titans territory, the Steelers literally couldn't convert those turnovers into touchdowns. It was literally, you know, a heroic performance by the Titans defense because they were put in so many horrible spots defensively. But yeah, that's a good point. If the Titans do match up against the Steelers again, I think they can end up pretty easily handling them if they can just avoid the turnovers, because the turnovers was the only thing that literally killed the Titans' chance at winning that game on Sunday. Turnovers, 4 turnovers, 3 fumbles and a pick, man. So avoid the turnovers, and I think they win that game handedly, if I might add that.
I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is a pumpkin, and he's only gotten worse over the course of the season. So I don't think he's going to beat you. It just comes down to if you can, you know, avoid their best players making huge plays.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything else. Titans. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you this, Trey. Looking at these Pro Bowl, I know the Pro Bowl doesn't mean much, but, you know, free safety, you guys do get Kevin Byard in. Is Kevin Byard good enough to be the All-Pro at free safety?
Yeah, he's been arguably, and I know Justin Simmons has a run at the specific title, but Kevin Byard has arguably been the best free safety in football this year. I think he's been maybe one of the saving graces of this Titans defense, simply because he's so reliable in the back end. We talk about range and depth for free safeties, playmaking. I mean, Kevin Byard has all of that. And not only that, you know, you can literally place him all over the field. You can place him, you know, in the back end as a center field safety, or maybe you can bring him down to play as a little bit of a robber. Sort of like, not like an extra linebacker, but he's a guy, he's a free safety that has, you know, an abnormal amount of physicality to him, maybe. You know, he was using that role in his rookie year. You know, it wasn't particularly, you know, he wasn't particularly great at that role, but he has that capability to be a little bit more physical, you know, in the run game, you know, as a tackler and whatnot. But his best role is as a center field sort of safety that can use his depth and range to make plays in the back end. So he's been excellent this year. And I think that's really, you know, it speaks a lot because Kevin Byard had a really bad year last year. You know, it was the worst year of his career. I think he was arguably the worst position or the worst player of the Titans defense last year. And that's saying something because the Titans defense was so bad last year. So kudos for him for really stepping up, rebounding after that bad year he had, you know, last year, and maybe retaking that claim as the best free safety in all of football this year.
Yeah, I just wanted to see your thoughts on that before we head out of this Titans talk. So this is the perfect length for a podcast. And I know if we go in like in depth on these week 16 matchups, this thing will go another hour. So yeah. I need us to be rapid fire, which all three of us are incredibly bad at. So I'm going to give each of us a game. You get a paragraph. You get a paragraph. And a paragraph and a pick. I will start with you, Trey. Tomorrow night, Titans 49ers.
I have the 49ers tomorrow. That's a tough decision to make now that they have Julio Jones and AJ Brown there. But I'll take the 49ers tomorrow. That's probably my safest pick because the Titans won't have Roger Saffold or Taylor Lewan, and that spells disaster when you have a 49ers defensive line that can get after the quarterbacks.
All right. Christmas Day games. Joe, the Packers and the Browns.
Oh, Packers, without a doubt.
Has there ever been, in a season where the MVP race has been muddled, has there ever been an easier choice for the All-Pro at quarterback than Aaron Rodgers?
It would be pretty shocking if Aaron Rodgers should win the MVP this year. He might not because of the whole fiasco with COVID, but no, it should be easy. He should be the All-Pro. He should be the All-Pro. He should be the MVP again.
Yeah. Colts Cardinals, the Colts quickly becoming a team I'm falling in love with. Don't know why. I generally dislike Carson Wentz. Don't understand why I've enjoyed watching them over the past few weeks. Maybe it's Jonathan Taylor. Maybe it's a very spunky defense. Maybe it's just those blue uniforms in that Lucas Oil Stadium. They just pop a little bit. I'm very in on the Colts, and this is put up or shut up time, I think, for our guy, Trey, for Cliff Kingsbury, because we sat here all offseason and we we straight up slandered the guy. And he came out and proved us wrong. But it looks like everything we said might come to be factual statements if they lose this game. It is time to win. And who knows if they can with that DeAndre Hopkins. So we will see what happens there. I'm going to give Cliff Kingsbury the benefit of the doubt one last time. I think the Cardinals bounce back here. I think they have something to prove. I think they'll play well. I think they will beat the Colts. Trey, Ravens, Bengals.
Ooh, I'll take Bengals. They're young. They're inconsistent. But they're going up against a Ravens team that, you know, might or might not have Lamar Jackson. And even if Lamar does play, he might be hobbled. And then even if Lamar doesn't play, you know, I like what Tyler Huntley did last week and what he's showed in limited action this season. But he's still a backup quarterback that could still be a little bit volatile at times, you know. So I'll take the Bengals here.
Joe, Broncos, Raiders.
Broncos, but I do not feel at all confident because the Raiders have the pass rush to make Drew Lock poop his pants. But they're also really weak outside of Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. So the recipe for success should be pretty clear if Pat Shurmur wakes up.
Mm-hmm. That's a big gamble. I'm feeling Raiders personally. Rams, Vikings. The Vikings remain this weird, fun team that are just total bizarro world football titans. They are either really great or really mediocre, and there is no in between.
Yes,
they play the Rams, and if the Rams can put it together here, I think we get more Rams Super Bowl discourse. The game against Seattle wasn't their best showing, but they, you know, they came through, they got the win. This one's going to be back and forth. I know in prime time at 11, no, not in prime time, at 11 a.m. on a Sunday after Christmas in Minnesota, that's the perfect time for a weird Kirk Cousins has like 400 yards game that everyone forgets about for a little while because it was buried in the 11 a.m. slate. I'll take the Vikings in this one. Bills, Patriots, part deux. Trey.
I'll take the Patriots. I know they look mediocre against the Colts, but I just can't believe in the Bills right now. I just don't care about the Bills at this moment. I mean, they have the potential to go up at any time, but they still don't really have a run game. And I don't know. COVID's kind of ravaging their team right now, too. So I'll take the Patriots in this one.
Joe, Chiefs, Steelers.
Chiefs. I'm not picking the Steelers. I have no faith in Ben Roethlisberger
at all.
They keep winning, though. I will just say that they keep winning. So I don't believe in them either, but they keep winning. That's all I'll say there. And finally, Monday Night Football. I just want to bring this up. I'm not interested in watching the Saints. Their defense is great. Their offense is unwatchable almost. But I'm curious about the other team here. The Dolphins have gone on one of the most, I think it's one of the most undersold storylines right now. The Dolphins have gone on like a 7-game winning streak, more or less, over the past 7 weeks. They keep beat, and I know they're all against bad teams, but they started this year 1-7, and to be 7-7 right now, and if they win out, a chance to make the playoffs, it's incredibly impressive. Tua's played really well over the past month. I am excited to watch him in prime time on Monday night.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, that'll do it for us for the podcast. Well, both of you, thank you for joining me. I know it's a holiday week. I know there's family things to do, and I appreciate you taking a moment of your night out with me. Happy holidays to both of you. Merry Christmas if you celebrate it. Anyhow, Joe, where can people find you on the social medias? And let's get out of here.
So I am on Twitter at JoeRowe_NFL. I write for Mile High Report. I have a podcast called Cover Two Broncos, and we occasionally talk about good teams. And that's about it.
Very nice. And Trey, why don't we just do the shout outs for the holiday season? Merry Christmas.
Appreciate it, man. You can find me on Twitter at Trey Watkins 099. Find my tweets about Titans there. And also my daily rants about Barcelona. I write for Broadway Sports Media. You can find that on Twitter at Broadway Tennessee. It's Broadway Tennessee. It's where you'll find all our work for Titans, Natural SC, Preds, and an assortment of other things. And I still technically write some for Black Sports Online. So you can find my work there as well.
Oh, yeah. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric18Utah, the drama of it all, sportsblog.com. I'm actually writing on there a little bit, two articles this month. No big deal. That's more than I've written in 1 month for at least a year. So some progress on that front. You can follow this podcast, which is mainly what I do, at End Zone Pod. And yeah, follow these two gentlemen because they are grinding through. I've had to step back from the grind a little bit. It's been a challenging year, but hoping to keep pushing forward. This is always a fun time. So thank you so much again, both of you, for joining me. Sincerely, it's always so much fun to talk with both of you. And to our listeners, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Enjoy time with your family, and enjoy the football this weekend. Peace out.